Inside Lacrosse Podcasts, the source of the sport.
Hello and welcome back to the BLL Happy Hour Podcast. Alongside Chris Rosenthal, I'm Kevin Brown for Inside Lacrosse. Rosie, you're not taking your fifth year at Syracuse, but you are tuned in for the run-in for the 2026 Premier Lacrosse League regular season finish here. How we doing? Coming off an electric, literally, weekend at in Denver, Colorado.
I am great. Denver weekend was awesome. Had a little bit of everything. Had your one goal finishes, your overtime thrillers, your good old-fashioned butt whoopings, and everything in between. And just for the record, I am not officially ruling out going back to Syracuse for one more year. If I can get in on that, somebody let me know where to sign, because I'd do it in a second.
Have you played a game in Colorado?
Not as of yet, no.
No veil appearances or anything for you?
Nope, not yet, but there's still time.
Still time. That is how the five Syracuse Orange players, four of whom have appeared in Premier Lacrosse League games this summer, have joined a Colorado suit seeking extra year of eligibility within the new 5-5 eligibility framework from the NCAA. That's Rookie of the Year contender and number 3 overall pick Joey Spallina headlining the group, Billy Dwan third, Luke Roa, Michael Leo, and Finn Thompson. Thompson, who was just signed Wednesday from the general manager, California Redwoods, the father of Joey Spallina. We'll see. This is a very developing story. A lot of nuance and stuff that we won't hit on in this podcast, but we will be reaching out for further comments and more developments as we are able to get them. So make sure to stick close to insidelacrosse.com for those updates, because it's a fascinating story in which Joey Spallina has 26 points in 7 games. You see, Dwan hasn't been able to play the last couple of games in the Maryland Whipsnakes game day lineup roster, where they also have Jack McDonald. Jack Posey has been getting time at LSM and playing pretty well. So I wonder if any of this has affected his status within that 19-man lineup. Luke Roa has appeared in 2 games, no points. Leo has 5 points in 5 games. And it's just a fascinating developing story. Thompson was signed on June 2nd and was placed on the unavailable travel list due to the Canadian visa sorting out, of course. But it's a fascinating story. Syracuse coach Gary Gate has given every assurance, apparently, according to the suit, that no roster spots will be taken from current freshmen or players in the class of 2026. So there's room for them to come back. They want to come back. They have lost in back-to-back semifinals. And as it pertains to this podcast, they've all been drafted and played in games, and we are looking into whether how much that affects their amateurism status with the NCAA, and whether they've been cashing their checks, whether they I don't know how much that affects things, but that's the rumor on the street. Rosie, do you have any thoughts on the matter here?
I mean, strictly from a PLL side, I would be curious to see if the league has to offer anything. Because, you know, if I'm Jim Stagnita, you know, I'm probably very curious as to what this means. You know, he's like, hey, is my first round draft pick just, you know, kind of a one and done and then heading back? Then, you know, how is that going to play out as far as, you know, his team construction goes? I would imagine there's a possibility that he's definitely inquiring regarding, you know, compensatory picks or some sort of make right based on this situation, because obviously he didn't know this was even within the realm of possibility when he was, you know, handling his drafting business. So I'm very curious to see how it does end up playing out. But even to get to that point, a billion things have to go in a certain direction, right? So, you know, it's probably nothing that the league's going to weigh in on in the next day or so or anything like that. But yeah, there's a lot that we have just not dealt with or needed to deal with or probably foresaw dealing with as far as the situation goes. Because you kind of think, you know, a rule gets passed and then, you know, you're kind of on one side of the fence or the other. But, you know, it's certainly, I guess, worth asking if you want to go back, if something can almost, it almost feels like retroactively applying to you. But, I mean, worst they can say is no, I suppose. But, yeah, I'm curious to see how it plays out and then what, if anything, the PLL feels like they need to do in response.
Peter Schaefer, the lead attorney in the suit, again, to bring it back to the PLL, he's an agent for a good amount of the current players in the PLL and well connected in this realm. So, like you said, very, very interesting to see where things go from here. For you loyal PLL Happy Hour podcast listeners, we usually record on Tuesday nights to release on Wednesday mornings. You're getting this a day later, unintentionally, as even more news came out the next morning. The PLL and WLL announced Wednesday morning they are teaming up with the NLL. So some fantastic synergy that all lacrosse fans of the professional level can rejoice at. In the lead up to LA 28, announced the Global Lacrosse Games, a new competition featuring the best four men's and women's lacrosse teams in the world, representing four nations. It's based, inspired by the NHL, wildly successful Four Nations, a story first broken by Front Office Sports. The Spallina story, forgot to mention, was first reported by Dan Arestra. This is awesome. It replaces the championship series for the next 2 years, Rosie, so Christmas did come early in respect of it's December 8th through 13th in 2026, so it's a period where NLL players will have to take a break from the start of their regular season to take part in this event at the St. James outside of Washington, D.C., the same venue where the championship series in the end of February, early March has taken place the last handful of years. It's super exciting. USA and Canada will be there, we can safely assume. The other two nations are up for grabs. I think it'll be a grave mistake not to include the Haudenosaunee Nationals. To see Lyle Thompson playing against PLL caliber talent, PLL talent period, in a PLL kind of promoted setting will be awesome from my point of view, being a big Lyle fan, and just the creators of the game to lead up with to the Olympic Games, indirectly putting pressure on the IOC to include them in that program is really important. And to get some excitement around the official Olympic rules in this championship series format, where it's four teams, kind of a less than a week-long sprint, 5 days there at the St. James. Man, Rosie, I'm fired up.
Yeah, it's an exciting idea. I think it's going to be huge. You know, there's just going to be the eyes of, you know, both sides, right? You know, if you're a PLL fan, if you're an NLL fan, you're still going to at least check it out and see what your favorite players are doing. It's going to be very cool to see, you know, just a talent pool of, I guess, quite literally everybody, you know, to see what these teams are going to look like. There's going to be a ton of intrigue leading up to it. I'm going to be very curious to see as far as, you know, broadcasts go, you know, basically how big can this thing get? Because it feels like it's got, you know, almost limitless potential, right? We're at this period of time where all eyes around the sport are going to be focused on these games. So I think it could be huge. I think it's going to be incredibly exciting, a great time of year to have it. It is tough. I'm going to miss the championship series, admittedly. I like the kind of like the atmosphere around that. I like the almost kind of quirky sub-stories that have come out of it from time to time. You know, we're not going to have a Tommy Palasek flying in on a helicopter to play for Team USA. You know, Brian Phipps isn't coming back out of retirement, or Jack Runkle or anything like that. You know, I will miss the quirky charm of the championship series. But no, all in all, it's just limitless potential with this. I can't wait to see who's going to be on these teams, and, you know, just getting to see some of these superstars who, you know, a lot of them, you know, especially if you're talking about like a Team Canada or a Team Haudenosaunee that we don't necessarily see every given weekend with our PLL coverage. It's going to be pretty cool to see all those people in one spot like this.
You're such a lax rat, you, Rosie. Man, you're going to miss all the guys competing for roster spots in these PLL games, in the championship series games. No, listen, it's a two-year gap. We'll see if it comes back. The top four finishers of the regular season in the PLL this season are not going to be rewarded with championship series berths, but instead... so we'll see what they get, right? Like, this is so important just from a big picture lacrosse growth point of view, because if you're going into just the Olympics with having covered the Women's World Lacrosse Championship for the last week and a half, going on in Tokyo, it's been pretty electric. Coming off a quarterfinal round that was historically great. That is traditional field lacrosse. We need sixes lacrosse rivalry and storylines and narratives to pump into LA 28. And we really haven't had too much of it. Like Atlas Cup, sure, that's fantastic exhibition. But the global lacrosse games looks like something we can really pump up and drive some narratives and some rivalry talk, especially if, like, Canada beat the brakes off us and the Team USA, as if I'm on the roster, beat the brakes off everyone, really, in Birmingham, Alabama at the World Games and the introduction to the sport and what got lacrosse over the finish line for Olympic inclusion. And to see if anyone has closed the gap, namely the United States, will be fascinating, because this is a time of year where college, the spring season hasn't started yet, so the college coaches will be able to participate. The NLL players will be, like, the storylines just of being able to get Dane Smith, Josh Byrne, and company back in front of the PLL cameras and the USA defenses, and building the rivalry of USA Canada is obviously very important. Seeing Lyle pull off some crazy highlights, hopefully for the Haudenosaunee, will be massive, and obviously for new fans as well. But just the Canada-USA aspect of seeing these guys who are now playing major series lacrosse with Six Nations Chiefs, no longer with Carolina Chaos or PLL, be able to go at them. And it's like a really cool storyline of like, if you're doing a Last Dance type documentary and you're like sitting down years after the fact, like, yeah, we didn't see these guys for a couple years. Like, I knew we can take them, but like, we weren't sure. And then like all of a sudden, maybe Jeff Teed will be healthy by that time. Right. And we'll see Dane Smith just bulldozing everyone still. So it's going to be electric. As you can tell, the limitless opportunity for this international tournament is just racing through my mind.
Right. Yeah. This is one of those things where it was exciting to find out about, and you know, you read about it and it gets a little more exciting, but now like we're talking about it and like I'm just even more excited now. You know, like you mentioned Birmingham, and you know, no disrespect to that event or whatnot, but I feel like after these years, just what we have seen from the PLL and the NLL as far as how much they have embraced wanting to promote their product and, you know, taking the steps necessary to get the game out there, you know, demand as much screen time as you can, get as many eyes as possibly can be on it. I just feel like it's going to take this event and just have a giant battery strapped to it, right? There's just going to be so much more around it. And these players are all super pumped to represent their countries. And, you know, as much as I do love the championship series, is definitely different to, you know, play for the Atlas for 2 weeks or something like that versus playing for Canada, you know, coming down here 25 minutes away from the nation's capital. You know, I feel like it's going to be a much different environment, much different atmosphere. And, you know, it's going to be a lot on the line, even though this is the first time and, you know, it's a stepping stone towards the Olympics and stuff like that. I feel like it's something that's going to be taken incredibly seriously by the players. And, I mean, I just think we're in for a super huge treat. I think it's going to be awesome.
Like, just think if we went into LA 28 without this buildup, like, we wouldn't be able to, just going in cold would have been a bad idea. So, very commendable effort and collaboration between the two leagues, really, and the WLL is really exciting. First time ever the women's lacrosse will be in the Olympic Games. So, we've talked about the men's side being in there in 1932, 1908. This is the first time we'll see the woman playing in any Olympics. So huge strides being made, and it almost adds to the animosity, right? Of like, yeah, sure, if Chaos were in the PLL final the last however many years, it would create those natural USA-Canada rivalries. Jeff Teat is obviously a big member of the PLL out injured this year, winning the PLL last year and the MVP a couple years ago. But just like being able to be like, if you weren't in the league last couple years and now you're playing like full box, like it's the clash of styles of just box versus field. In this new game, in this new discipline, it's going to be full Olympic rules, no two-point line, no hitting, really. So it's like full finesse. It's fascinating. It's super compelling.
Yeah, I cannot wait to see. I am even more intrigued by like the team construction because of this. You know, it was something that I kind of paid a little attention to, you know, various discussions about who's going to be at the, you know, training camps and the tryouts, you know, when they'd have like, you know, Team USA Red versus Blue and all that stuff. I would read the article, you know, and then I wouldn't think much else about it. But now I know, you know, there's a specific date okay, in December, I'm going to see some players. I want to know who's going to be out there and what is that going to mean and how are they going to represent themselves on that St. James floor and who's going to be, you know, the staff with, you know, the insight to the game. You know, we mentioned the old game back in Birmingham, and yes, U.S. did get profoundly dusted in that matchup, but I would assume they've learned a great deal about both roster construction and, you know, just kind of strategically since then. And I think it's going to be real fascinating to see. Yeah, like this, you mentioned it, you know, something else leading up to the Olympics. And I think that's definitely a thing that this can do. Like, it's just creating so much more of a, you know, if you liked sixes before, it's like we've got the championship series. And that's, you know, that's pretty cool. But it's like, all right, now here is kind of an extra step to it that kind of gets you there a little bit more on the way to LA. And yeah, I am fired up. Let's get these rosters cracking right now. I want to see who's on these teams.
Emulating hockey is a tremendous role model and path to follow because we saw the success of that in the summer. The Canada-USA final was just absolute scenes, cinema, and all the fun adjectives you can use to describe that epic finish. Because, and listen, Rosie, if fans are reading those articles, they gotta be reading yours as well. An incredible Denver weekend where three of the best teams played twice, and the only one to lose both of them was the actual home team in the Denver Outlaws, as the Utah Archers and New York, or in the Utah Archers and the Philadelphia Water Dogs won both their games in Denver. We'll get to Philly actually being more of a home team. In fact, Rosie, you were up till like 3 a.m. Friday night, Saturday morning. Weather delays did not help the case of the Outlaws, obviously, but plenty of storylines to follow here, namely the Outlaws dropping both their games, 4-5 now. They're slipping down the Western Conference standings as the Utah Archers took full control of things. The only team in the league to play 10 games with a whopping 32 score differential. Now at 6-4, they've won how many games in a row? Four now? Give us some takeaways from your impressions watching the Utah Archers do what they did at Peter Barton.
Utah Archers. First of all, the thing I love about the Utah Archers is you can pretty much count them for once a game, at least. One of their short stick defensive midfielders is going to just straight up put somebody into the ground. It might be Bo Paterson, it might be Piper Bond, maybe Aiden McGuire, but somebody is getting just straight pile-drived into the turf. I thought, so the
I would say you can count on two. You can count on two of those.
right. It's probably like a 1.8 average or something like that. Sometimes you'll get three or four. You know, sometimes they'll just let it slip in only one. The first game, when it happened against Denver, I was like, okay, you know what? It's been raining a lot. I gave the benefit of the doubt. You know, I was like, the turf is, you know, the ground's really wet. Maybe it was more just kind of, you know, if you hit somebody in the right spot, the feet keep going situation, right? And then it happened again. And I was like, well, I don't think it's the turf today. I think they're just really good at, you know, I guess the strength and leverage that goes into just putting somebody into the ground. And it's a weird combination of features. I don't know if you've ever played with like a D-MIDI or something like that. I used to play box with a guy who was not particularly tall, not particularly jacked or anything like that. But every time somebody dodged on him, he just knew pressure points or something like a ninja and would just put him into the turf. and the Archers just have a bunch of dudes like that. So that's my favorite thing right now, I'd say, about watching them. And they demonstrated this in both of their games this weekend.
To be clear, they are also very jacked.
Yes, yes. I'll say this. It doesn't hurt. It doesn't hurt to be incredibly jacked when you're doing this. But I think part of it is a sort of a footwork and leverage combination kind of thing as well. But yeah, if you're gigantic, it also certainly helps your case. I mean, other than that, where do we go? I guess Brett Dobson, another series of classic Brett Dobson performances by him. He is yet to slip this summer. You know what I mean? And I'd say this summer, we have seen a lot of performances from goalies who have had notably bad games. You know, it's super tough to be a goalie, right? I don't think this is anything too wildly critical to say. Sometimes you're going to have a bad day, right? And it could be like, think about it like this. There's one position on the field where, like, if you're a face-off midfielder and it's really sunny out, it doesn't matter to you at all. You do your job exactly the same either way because, you know, you're looking at the ground when you get the ball. If you're a goalie and it's really sunny out, you might give up six goals that you would never give up any other day because it's just tough to be a goalie, right? There's a lot of crap happening, you know?
Could be somebody
setting a screen, who knows? All sorts of stuff. But that being said, Brett Dobson has just been solid all year. Just, you know, hopefully that is not a jinx and he, you know, has like...
Was also underselling it, maybe.
Yeah.
Solid. He's been spectacular. He's been catapulted into the MVP conversation.
Absolutely.
Not that he wasn't already, that not, he's been into the serious DJ Kerr stratosphere.
Right. The talk's been getting louder, but he has been there for quite a few weeks, I'd say. At least here.
Right. We had him third in our MVP watch, going past a couple weeks now. If you loyal listeners remember the podcast where I was like, we should have done this a week later because CJ was just on a tear. And then a week later, he scores only a goal against Brendan Lavelle and Brett Dobson and the Archers. And game back on. We got the MVP race. Two-headed race for sure right now, I would say. I don't know if you would agree. Who are you picking right now? You have to give a prediction for the end of the year. The Archers are now 6-4, so they only have two more games left. CJ Kerr has more time to bang in plenty more goals. Who are you picking right now to win the MVP?
So I think right now the talk around Dobson is louder because I think he is growing increasingly appreciated. You know, people are saying it's kind of like it's catching like a wildfire kind of thing. People are like, oh, yeah, you're right. He is doing a lot. He is getting great. Blah, 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 blah. That guy is really, really good. And the more that goes, I feel like it's going to kind of roll bigger and bigger towards the finish line. That said, CJ Kerst has the opportunity to make history with single season goal scoring title. And if he does that, then I think the CJ Kerst noise will get even louder than it is. Because, like, Brett Dobson can be fantastic, but I don't think he's going to attack any particular record of regard. You know, maybe he might have the single game save or something, you know, something like that. But,
right. Like, if he has 20 saves in the next two games and they go 2-0, 8-4 finish in this league is crazy. And that would be hard to ignore. But if not, you're giving it the curse. Don't dance around the predictions, Rosie. I see you dancing.
My prediction is that Kerst is going to set the goal scoring record and will be voted the MVP in no small part because of it. I have been leaning more in the Dobson camp.
Interesting. Interesting.
But I am one man. I am not the person who solely determines these things. So,
are one of the voters, of course. You will not reveal your ballot. We are simply talking predictions here. And CJ Kirst is now 2 goals away from breaking, 1 away from tying Marcus Holman's 30-goal mark, the single-season PLO record. Also, 10 games back then, but guess what? CJ Kirst missed the first couple games. It still applies. Oh, you silly listeners. Rosie, there is a fascinating run into the PLL playoffs in both the East and West conferences. Would you assess this statement as true, where 3 teams are vying for 2 spots in the West and 2 teams are vying for 1 spot in the East?
3 teams, 2 spots. Yes. Yes, I would agree with both of those.
To me, the Philadelphia Water Dogs, Maryland Whipsnakes, and Utah Archers are all but assured PLL playoff spots. You cannot convince me otherwise. Props to the Archers, man. They're really, really, really doing it. We talked about them enough, though, Rosie. Let's talk about the California Redwoods. They're playing 2 games in Anthony Kelly's Columbus, Ohio this weekend. They are up against the Chaos and Outlaws for the last 2 spots, right? But it's not going to be easy. So let me read you out the listed opponents for the rest of the regular season here, as the Redwoods will play the Chaos and Atlas this weekend, and then Boston and Denver. The Chaos will play the Redwoods, Water Dogs, and Archers, whereas the struggling, coming off an 0-2 weekend, reigning runner-up Outlaws will play the Whipsnakes, Atlas, and Redwoods. Rosie, whose path is the most difficult?
I gotta say, I am not jealous of Carolina having to play the Archers and the Water Dogs. Those are 2 very frightening matchups right there. One in conference, one not. But, you know, going through it immediately, that was the first one that jumped out to me like, yikes, that's tricky.
Right, like, congrats on your big time overtime win against the Cannons this weekend. You're back on track. First win since June 6th. That you reminded me in your game recap. I was like, what? That can't be right. I triple checked that. And I was like, I still couldn't believe it after I double checked it. So it's a great call because, listen, this is a team I think everyone has penciled in as the last in their power rankings the last few weeks. You beat Boston, 7 or 6 this week out of the 8 teams. But you're still not feeling great about that offense. But when, listen, Rosie, you wrote about it in the wrap-up column. When Stephen Brooks comes up with a good reward for assisted shots, then maybe you can start humming.
Yeah, he said they were real fired up about that. You know, taking him out to a steak dinner. I mean, who doesn't like a steak dinner? So, you know, it worked. He said he needed to try something, you know, whatever he needed to do to kind of, you know, you hear about that from time to time in sports. You'll say, you know, all right, listen, beer's on me if we get this win or whatever the case may be. It doesn't even have to be a huge thing, but just some sort of little rallying thing to shake up the crew. And, you know, I don't know why he went with steak, first of all. You know what I mean? He probably could have gotten with something a little more affordable, but, you know, I'm not pocket watching Brooksy, but he probably could have said, you know, burritos or something.
He can always change it up as long as it's true for the first one, and to specify it was for 50% of the goals that they score will have to be assisted, right?
Absolutely. And that had been quite a problem for them. I think they were averaging 3 assisted goals per game. So they just, they turned it around. And they looked good. Not to tread too much on something I think I said, talking to Joe Keegan on The Scoop. Check it out if you haven't seen it already. I thought Teddy Malone looked just fearless, you know, and that's something that Carolina could really use. Not that they play scared by any means, right? Because, you know, you're not going to associate names like Chad Palumbo and Owen Hiltz with playing scared, but somebody who could just, look to drive and distribute. And I thought he did a fantastic job in that way. Looked like he really fit in. And he's been coming along for the past few weeks. Similarly, this was his high as far as points go. But, you know, I think he looked really good. And like I said, something that the team has needed. So, you know, maybe they'll have another steak dinner heading their way soon.
Or something a little cheaper for Ruffy. It is fascinating. It sets up an enticing matchup between the Redwoods and Chaos to kick off Week 11 in Columbus, Ohio at Ohio State Lacrosse Stadium. What about the Outlaws here? Rosie, you mentioned The Scoop. You broke down where they're struggling, what's going wrong with them, and you've been on a podcast tour of sorts here. You're a hot commodity in this part of the season here. What's going on with the Denver Outlaws, man? 0-2, didn't get any injury help. We were waiting for them to get fully healthy. Oh, great. Brendan O'Neill, right knee injury. And he sits out the second game of the weekend. So both John Dunphy and Nolan Byrne get to play. Evan Plunkett wasn't there, their fourth overall pick, who they traded 3 picks for due to he was going to miss Thursday walkthrough and getting stationed in his Alabama Army service setting. Should be available this weekend, so we'll see him coming back into the lineup. Nolan Byrne showed some flashes, and Jared Bernhardt had to exit that second game as well due to a hamstring issue. Rosie, the run-in for them coming into the Western Conference playoffs as the runner-up, as you so eloquently explained a podcast or two ago, like, pressure's on. Like, they have... like, they're all in on this season, and they got the Maryland Whipsnakes, New York Atlas, and California Redwoods coming up to finish their regular season campaign.
Yeah, I think what we saw this past weekend was one of those situations where, like, you know, when it rains, it pours kind of deals, right? And things weren't looking great, and we saw Brendan O'Neill with his situation, and they had to not dress him for the last game. Apparently, that was a last-second sort of decision. They had him out there testing it before the game. It had been bothering him previously, but they weren't sure if he was going to go or not. Had him out there testing it. I think they were testing out to see if they could get, like, a brace that worked well. Couldn't really find anything. And then, ultimately, Sudan was like, you know, not really sure we want you playing on the back end of these, you know, 2 games right next to each other in the schedule like this. You know, I guess the idea being maybe we can save him and get him right down the road, right? Maybe Brendan O'Neill at 100% for the final week or two is going to be way better than having one for 75%, but for every game or something like that. Understanding, of course, it's just kind of been, I think, a thing we've heard a lot, especially with the Outlaws this year, is we're going to need everybody. When push comes to shove, playoff time, right? You do what you can to get there, and that's when you'll need everybody at 100%. Jared Bernhardt, it didn't look good. Had the classic hammy pull sort of pose, you know, where you're running, and then you just kind of grab the back of the leg there. So we'll wait and see with him. There's been a whole laundry list of lower body injuries affecting that team. And I think this is part of just one of those things that goes to show you, you know, you can be one goal away, right? But there is no guarantee every other variable goes your way, right? So they have obstacles that they couldn't have possibly predicted when they were, you know, deciding to run it back this year. It's tough to guarantee, you know, everybody's a year out of school, everybody's a year out of whatever they're doing, and, you know, soft tissue is real tricky sometime, right? So we'll see if they have enough, even if it's not structure-wise, like enough in the tank to get across the finish line. I think it's going to be a lot of pressure / opportunity for Nolan Byrne, that, you know, just showing up, and he had two goals there, and they're probably going to need a lot more from him. Evan Plunkett, this is certainly your time to shine. You know, I think he's going to have a lot of opportunity. Very curious to see what happens with Brendan O'Neill. If they get him on some sort of pitch count, if they keep him out again, you know, I guess we'll figure out later in the week if he's going to be good moving forward. But still a lot of questions, a lot more questions than answers for that Denver All-Out team. And by the way, all of this is offensively speaking. They gave up 9 goals in a row to that Water Dogs team.
Terrible start. Logan McNaney didn't make a save the first 7, right? 7 or 8. Was the start of the second quarter. I don't see Logan McNaney playing that bad in a while. Two straight games where he just wasn't seeing it right. And I have all the faith in him to turn things around. But to your point, it's not really on him. It's the defense not giving him great shots.
Yeah, it was just rough to see. And, you know, we've certainly seen enough from Logan McNaney to assume that that's not going to be what it's like every single time he goes out there. But I think, you know, if we're going to double back for a quick second, I think that's kind of like what I was saying about Brett Dobson, right? You know, Logan McNaney got himself a home game, feeling good, and just got lit up. These things happen. You could tell watching that game, he was just not, you know, even as somebody who's not a goalie expert, right? I'm not, you know, Brian Dougherty or anything like that. But you can tell when somebody's like stepping to the ball or not seeing it at the same time, right? And he was just not seeing it. A lot of those Water Dog shots typically don't go in against the Logan McNaney, but, you know, they count all the same. So I guess there are some questions on the defensive side, but, you know, just there's a lot of questions all over the place for this Denver Outlaws team right now. There are certainly a fascinating team, and I don't think they would like to be this fascinating right now because it's not good stuff.
So you're saying chaos don't make the playoffs out of these three?
Yeah. It's going to be super tough for them, especially what we saw this past weekend from Utah and Philadelphia. Both our last impressions for both Utah and Philly were very strong. You know, saw Utah beating the Whipsnakes solidly, and Philly doing that to Denver. You know, if they can continue on those sort of trajectories, I don't know how Carolina, you know, manages to, I guess, do whatever they need to do to stay alive in that situation. The thing about Carolina in that Boston game is they did need 20 saves from Blaze Reardon, right? So heaven forbid if he has a 17-save game, which is fantastic, that might not get it done moving forward.
I do feel like the Carolina-California matchup this weekend, whoever wins that sets himself up, obviously, because Philly and Utah, they could be coasting to the finish line at that point, and those games might not mean as much to them as it would the Chaos. So maybe the Chaos have a leg up in those last couple games. You look at the Redwoods running with the Atlas who have been the league worst, the Cannons who have found themselves and just made too many mistakes down the stretch. They were due for a loss, if you know this league. And then the Outlaws will be a fascinating regular season finale between the Woods and Outlaws. So I'm going to go full on reverse here. It just has taken on a life of its own, and I feel like these injuries have just been mounting up. I don't see the Outlaws making the playoffs. The Whiff Snakes, the Atlas, the Woods, three winnable games if they're at full strength, but with the injury concerns, the bad vibes, like, I'm done with the days where I'm like, I feel like I only reserve it for the Water Dogs, where I'm like, come on, we know they're better than this. But, like, Carolina and California are destined to meet each other in that first round of the playoffs. Utah seems like they're running away with it and going to get that first round bye, so kudos to them. Title game from a year ago, both teams not making it for the playoffs this year. You and Joe kind of outlined it briefly, but what that does to the 2026-27 offseason in the PLL in terms of all the intrigue of who's going to come out of the draft, who they can reshape their team around in terms of free agency, the expiring deals with the Outlaws, and Jeff Teat's return from injury with the Atlas. I do believe the Cannons make it over them in the East, so it's going to be it sets up a very fascinating player movement period for a PLL that has all these stars on the Outlaws and Atlas who, when you're not winning, sometimes a change of scenery is going to happen.
Yeah, I cannot wait for player movement. Even if they return, I can't wait to see how they would possibly return. Fascinated to see what GM Sudo does as far as handing out deals, handing out some offers. If everybody would want to return, they're very much about, you know, we're a selfless team and, you know, we have what we need to get the job done. But if you don't get the job done, I think there's a lot of people who are going to maybe look around and wonder, right? Especially when it comes to getting some money, because I think a lot of these guys are going to be offered significant deals elsewhere. And it's, you know, we saw it with Dalton Young. We were able to retain him, brought him back for 2 years. He had gotten offers from other people. It was a very highly coveted commodity, but, you know, he liked what he had in that locker room and thought they had what it took to win a championship. So I don't know if everyone is going to continue to feel that way after this season, if they in fact, you know, underperform or if they have some questions about the direction of the franchise, you know? So yeah, either way, I'm fascinated to see what they're going to do. I cannot wait. Can't wait for the player movement period. Just a lot of lacrosse stuff I can't wait for right now is what it comes down to.
And you're going to have to wait because we got to get to week 11 here, Rosie. The matchup between the Woods and Chaos, we touched on a lot there, the big picture. We haven't seen the Woods in a minute here, I feel like, and they have a big weekend ahead of them. Any keys that you're looking out for when they are playing a Carolina Chaos squad that was a game that came down to the wire and a controversial moving pick that I'm not sure that I ever got your full opinion on?
You did not get my full opinion on it, and while I am aware that it existed, I don't recall it happening.
Remember, so Dylan Malloy was held pretty quiet. He had a goal coming around that GLA screen, and I thought Quint called it out perfectly on the real-time broadcast. The screen setter look like he was nudged ever so slightly, just enough though that you cannot call a moving pick there. And Dylan Malloy sticks it top right.
That's right. Okay, I do remember that now. I was of the mindset that you probably don't want refs one way or another stepping up and saying something.
Yeah,
on something of that degree at that point in time. You know, I don't think it would have been called most times anyway, but I feel like you don't need a ref to intervene at that point. You probably should have just let him play.
Do you think this one comes down to a similar fun ending?
I think these two teams could have it in them for another close one. I'm curious to see what's going to happen with Justin Inacio. I want to see if he's going to be healthy or not. I haven't heard anything yet as of this recording. But T.D. Erlen, you know, could be tight, quite tough for them, you know, if they're rolling out three or four D-middies to try and just tie him up. Even though it worked out okay for Carolina last game, you know, giving Boston all those 32-second possessions. Just because it worked out for them, I don't necessarily think it's something they want to adopt moving forward.
Yeah, no.
Don't want to test fate on that. But other than that, yeah, I think it's going to be a good matchup. Last time we saw the Redwoods, they did not do a lot of scoring. I think they only scored 7 goals last time we saw them, yeah, against the Whipsnakes there. So it's tough to score 7. And then have this down weekend where they're not playing. They're probably itching to get back out there and kind of put a better product out on the table. So we'll see that, and might see a few new additions in that lineup too. We'll see Cole Kastner probably back off the pup list now. And we'll see if we get some Finn Thompson there to help shake up the offense as well.
We shall see indeed, and expect, especially with the news that we talked about at the top of the podcast. The matchup that I'm most looking forward to is just the goalie matchup, right? We got the last World Championship goalie battle here with Dylan Ward and Blaze Reardon. Do we see Ryan Kraddick back in net for the Redwoods after he came in last game? So it's going to be interesting to see who can win that one, because a 5th win for California will do them wonders ahead of an important Sunday battle against New York. Boston versus Utah, 8:30 on ESPN Plus at Ohio State Lacrosse Stadium. This is a fascinating one as well. Boston looks like they put it fully together. Utah, both these two teams, we touched on kind of the 5 keys to their turnaround last podcast, out of the cellar of the their respective conference standings and into the playoff conversation. And for Utah, the top of the league. When you look at Boston, you're looking at a team that, like, Ben Ramsey clears that ball 9 times out of 10, and they're likely to get a pretty darn good possession out of that and maybe win the game in overtime. And instead, they give up the Teddy Malone dunk, Owen Hiltz with the nice interception there. So for Utah, like, we've talked about their defense, but Sam King is such a key for them. A second-year attackman out of Harvard. And when he's bringing out the jump shot like he did late in that game on Friday night against the Outlaws, like, oh, man, that's how I know that he's on. And that was just really fun to see, because he had a lot of expectations in my mind. And for him to be flying under the radar as a second-year pro, and, like, all the attention on Connor Fields, and with Matt Moore, Tom Schreiber, and Grant Amon out this season, like, Sam King is a guy that is drawing these top matchups in terms of the speedier, really elite cover men of the league. And he's producing week in and week out. So it's going to be a fascinating thing to see where Owen Grant will likely be more of a Connor Fields cover, where Hunter Smith might draw that matchup, or we'll see Will Donovan on that matchup and Hunter Smith on Jack O'Keefe rather. So Rosie, this is a fun matchup when you look at the just the big picture wise from these two teams turning their season around, hitting their strides fully, and now kind of in the thick of it, the close the regular season.
Absolutely. I would pay good money, we'll say 3 months' rent, for Owen Grant versus Connor Fields, ISO Cam. Let's just watch that just all game long. The cerebral and physical game of a Connor Fields versus the also cerebral and also physical game of Owen Grant. I would like to see how that matchup would shake out. And Connor Fields, I don't know if you caught this in the last game, threw about 14 fakes on Emmett Carroll and got him to the ground and just threw it, just essentially, I guess what best be described as almost a Iverson-ish sort of stare
It
down with
was diabolical, the look down, man. It was about 3 seconds longer than I would expect a look down at a goalie from Connor Fields. Was that before or after? Things were getting chippy in that game. There were some big hits. And how much of a role do you think that played in that kind of a exchange?
I think it played a great deal. I think there was a great bit of chippiness. We saw Maguire Spolina had a little contact there. Couple hits throughout. Connor Fields kind of always getting beat up for one way or another. So I would guess, not having spoken to him, but I would guess the Connor Fields stare down was partially just because of the physical nature of the game. And I think probably around this point of the season, he's probably gotten sick of everybody's crap just beating on him all the time.
He loves it, man. He loves it. Just the goal on Friday night, right, where he's like leaning into the guy for 27 seconds and still managing to like inch his way towards the goal and gets that like finish in front is just like defenders, like you should almost be allowed like a different rule set if you're guarding Connor Fields in terms of like being able to just like hold him.
Right. Right.
He is just digging his shoulder into you, and your lower body strength has to like muscle him out with those pushes, and he wants the contact so that he can exploit the second that you relent, and he'll like skirt around you like ha, 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 I knew it. So it is a very fun matchup. 3 months rent though that you're given for this pay-per-view, ISO Cam.
I might have been exaggerating a little bit.
Three steak dinners,
Three steak sandwiches from the local Jimmy
maybe.
John's. I would do that in a heartbeat.
There we go. Dobson is just on a heater, like you said. So this Boston Cannons offense has been so efficient in 52 second possessions that I think it'll be plenty of those with Mike Sisselberger having the season that he has had. So, any other keys that we haven't mentioned in this one?
Colter McKenzie 0 for 7 last game, in what has otherwise been a super reliable, consistent season from him. So, I'm expecting something a little bit better this time around. Bit of a bounce back from him, but this is a tough team to have that bounce back against.
Try to get Trey LeClaire on the podcast this week. If you know Trey, let him know that open invite onto the BLL Happy Hour podcast for Inside Lacrosse because he's on a heater. It's Columbus weekend. We can expect him to go off again in a campus that he is quite familiar with and a team that he led to the national championship game as a freshman in 2017. So a lot of storylines in this one. Let's move on to Saturday. August is here, Rosie. Make sure to pay your rent because you're going to forget with these matchups coming up. Denver Outlaws versus the Maryland Whipsnakes. This is a Brennan O'Neill versus Joey Spallina. We might not see both of the events that we both have mentioned on this episode. But aside from that, like, it's, you know, Rosie, almost in passing, and Quint used it as his intro to this PLL Power Rankings article that you should read on InsideLacrosse.com. Matt Rambo getting released from the New York Atlas last week or a couple weeks ago at this point. The Hunter Druin getting the start in for them. We'll touch on them when we get to the Sunday matchup. You know who might be available if Joey Spallina goes back to Syracuse? Matt Rambo, right back into the Whips lineup. Like, nothing happened. Just pretend nothing happened. TJ Malone, Rob Pinnell, and a motivated Matt Rambo who thought his career was done. And listen, he was like, he saw all these odes to him. He heard that we didn't give him enough podcast time last episode. He's like, listen, I still got something in the tank. Now, we'll see if anything that crazy happens, but it would be pretty crazy.
It's like a It's a Wonderful Life, Goes to Christmas Past kind of situation. He's seen what it's like without him, so now he's feeling inspired to come running back into action.
It's something that is not out of the realm of possibilities. It is definitely not impossible. But when you look at the attackman that Jim Stagnita could put in for Joey Spallina and guys that we were advocating for even last year when they were struggling a couple games, Aiden Carroll played attack his senior year at Georgetown. Matt Brandau finished his Yale career as the Ivy League all-time leader in points to Rob Pinnell's record, so teaming up with Rob down there would be fun. This is a game that Denver has to have, obviously. We talked about the run-in and their matchups ahead. There's no game that they can kind of coast or keep Brennan O'Neill out of the lineup with hopes that he'll be fully healthy down the line, because they need to win now. 4-5, an 0-2 weekend, and they need answers quick.
Absolutely. And for the record, you are selling your Denver Outlaws stock?
Sold. Already sold. They're missing the playoffs. New York Atlas missing it as well. And like I said, it creates a lot of intrigue for the offseason with the amount of star powers that they have and who they can pick up. Like, everyone is looking at this Philadelphia Water Dogs roster and, like, just reflecting back on themselves. Like, how did Dave Cottle just create this super team so easily? I mean, it was years in the making. Shout out to Annie Copeland, old friend of the pod, and all the work he did assembling this lineup. Because, like, this super team is just crazy. Like, we're going to get to them in this next matchup. But let's get some now. Because the 2-0 weekend, we haven't even touched on them. We're such a Western Conference podcast right now. Look at us recording at night and staying up till 3. 11-10 win over New York Atlas, and then a 18-8 shellacking that felt like far more after a 7-2 first quarter against the Outlaws set up this matchup in Columbus against the Carolina Chaos here. So it's I think the more fun matchup to talk about on Saturday.
We'll say this before we get there, though. There's nothing more indicative of the way their seasons are going than Philadelphia winning by a goal, but still winning against a team that everybody thought they would beat, and the New York Atlas losing by one goal, but still losing to a team that nobody thought they could beat.
Did you, so be honest, did you fall asleep incidentally, accidentally at all during this game?
No, sir. I was eyes wide awake. I grabbed like three handfuls of Nerds gummy clusters before the game, and I said, let's do this.
This is prime, like, writing window for you as well when you send all your IL submissions here. The matchup here that we have against the Chaos, of course, it's going to – the result on Friday is going to dictate a lot of what we can say about this when Carolina takes on the Redwoods first. But Blaze against this offense, like – it's a matchup that we simply have to see because hitting their stride with 18 goals against a Denver team that was already with their backs against the wall after a loss. And if you can take advantage of who I and others perceive to be maybe the weakest on paper in the Carolina Chaos without Jack Rowlett, is going to be, I think, paramount for a Philadelphia team that is, like, just hitting their stride. And if they lose this game, it's like, all right, how good really are they?
Yeah, I think that's a good way to assess it after a weekend where, you know, we saw them win but only put up a few, you know, 11, and then have that 14-goal first half of the next night out. They do have, you know, no surprise to say this, but they just have so many weapons. It is just kind of a matter of who's going to be hot at the right time. I think, and this, I guess because CJ Kirst is having the season he's having, I feel like we're not necessarily thinking enough about the season Michael Sowers is having. Just incredibly consistent every single time out. He has had one game this season where he scored 2 points. And every other game, it's either been 3, 4, 5, or 6. He is just not really, same sort of thing I was saying about Dobson, not really having the bad times. You know, I assume his job gets so much easier, you know, when he's running out there with CJ Kirst, or when you've got somebody like a Collison who's stretching the 2-point line now and, you know, just kind of expanding the different ways that the team can beat you, more so that they can just beat you. There's so many different ways, and if one isn't working well, then somebody else seems to find a way to step up. You know, you will have somebody in that midfield pop off for one or two here or there, right? Or you get Silas Richmond more involved in the offense, in the attack in particular, with the new look they've kind of been going with, switching him off with Kieran McArdle. Kieran McArdle is still finding ways to produce as well. They've got a lot of stuff they're working on in that offense. Certainly seems that they're peaking at the proper times as well. Everyone staying healthy and things like that. It certainly looks good for them. Chaos, it's tougher to see the path without Jack Rowlett in the lineup. But, you know, you can't argue against the fact that they just pulled off that last win. But I think this game could end up being a similar sort of fashion where a lot of it is going to come down to the shots that you can force the Water Dogs to put up and how many of those shots Blaze can stop.
Two questions. What did you make of Silas Richmond down at attack in the looks that he gave the Philly offense?
I thought they were really good, and I thought it feels to me more so than, you know, I didn't even detect any sort of pattern to it. You know, I guess later it would explain that maybe it was a, you know, they're subbing in an alternating specific amount of time based on the quarters and the, or the halves and the positions. I just felt more like it was almost like Silas Richmond kind of has an internship with that attack line, you know, and he's not working full 9 to 5, but he's going to come in after lunch and figure out how things go. And then he'll be there every day in a limited capacity, right? Because ultimately, look, I mean, the other two guys are significantly younger than Kieran McArdle. There's going to be a spot that makes itself available at some point. And Bill Tierney said McArdle was super supportive and, you know, totally down with the decision. He's going to figure out a way to contribute the best of his abilities coming out of the box. You know, his touches and production are reduced this season. That's no surprise. Having cursed for for almost a full year, not quite what it was last year. It's an inevitable sort of thing for most players, right? So, you know, he gets it. He understands how it goes, and he's looking to shape the team to the future. I thought Silas Richmond, he had a couple shots last game that really reminded me of Albany Silas Richmond. You know, like a quick roll dodge and sidearm shots kind of throw people off guard, can't really get prepared for it in time. You know, once the release of that shot is so much quicker coming out of a dodge or something like that. So I think it's really, look, if you're a Water Dogs fan, I think it's great to see, really cool opportunity to give him sort of, you know, introduce him into what's going to be, you know, the one would assume that lineup for many years to come down there on attack. So, you know, it looked like he fit.
Yeah, Keegs tweeted out it was whoever was closest to the sub box, right, in alternating quarters, the righty or lefty closer to the sub box will be seven right out. And it's kind of a cool way to do it. And you look at this offense, you look how many options that they have, overlooking Matt Collison and his deep threat and the two-pointers that he provides, Jimmy Freehill, the X-attackman. That nice assist that you wrote up in the wrap-up. So it's obvious that I've canceled. It's terminated. Title game collision course is off, Rosie. Just cancel your title game collision course. But for you, I don't even know if you subscribed or signed on to my title game collision course. Do you still think that we still have a title game collision course chance here? Between the Outlaws and Water Dogs, that is. The old title game collision course. You're canceling it. Officially? It's canceled.
I'm on board with the Utah Archers. They got too much going for them.
Don't be a prisoner of the moment either. Don't have any recency bias now.
I mean, the moment's been going on for quite a while, though. You know, it seems like they've figured it out. I got a lot of trust in Chris Bates and Tony Resch. You know, they've got some
only one ice cream trip last week, not two.
Yeah, they have impeccable resumes. The defense has been stellar. Their offensive guys have stepped up in remarkable ways, as we discussed a little bit earlier, all those guys. Now, you know, of course, the thing that could happen is they get towards the finish line and they just lay a goose egg one game, right? You know, we've certainly seen that in sports many times before. But right now, I got to say, I got them penciled in, just rolling the rest of the way with this thing.
It is a fun matchup between just two good boys, two good men of the sport, Chad Palumbo, CJ Kirst. Oh man, to see them play together on that lefty wing together, I maybe overstepped in terms of trade value last podcast. If you heard that, it was just to get them on the same wing together, people. Palumbo, flipping the lid. Let's see if he can do it. 3 p.m. on ESPN Plus Eastern Time on the August 1st. Let's move to Sunday's matchup, wrap things up here on the PLL Happy Hour podcast, because the New York Atlas take on the California Redwoods, coming off a matchup with their chaos team. They got a day in between for rest, where Anthony Kelly can show them all around Ohio, and the Atlas get to be like, listen, we are not out of this yet, but will they be out of it by the time the final whistle blows, Rosie?
You know,
14% chance coming in for a playoff.
Yeah, 14% is not a great chance. Mike Pressler is definitely, it's always funny. Well, it's not funny. It's interesting to see the post-game press conferences now because they're so different than what they were at the start of the year. The winning press conferences are so happy, and the losing press conferences are so sad because they just beat down, right? It sucks if you lose, but then, you know, if you've lost a bunch or your season's not going great, it's a grind for these guys to be there. They hate it and want to go home. But Mike Pressler, during his last press conference, was very adamant. He was like, we're not giving up. We're going to keep fighting. We've got a chance, you know, saying all the stuff that you want to hear your coach saying.
Anything can happen. Yeah,
that's right. You don't want to see your coach throw up his hands and be like, I don't know, maybe next year, I guess, or something like that. But he's still trying to figure out a way, right? You know, still got the hood popped up, trying to figure out if it's a carburetor issue or a timing, but whatever's going on, he's going to figure something out. You look at the lineup, and they've just had a real tough go at it. I will say this. New York Atlas, I have been very pleased and impressed with Brian Costabile's performance this year. I think he understood that he was going to have to do quite a great deal, and I think he's kind of accepted that challenge and run with it. Like what they've gotten recently from Reed Bowering. Just need somebody who doesn't need the ball a lot, pop up and give you a good pick and a goal or two here or there. The third attack spot, as you alluded to earlier, has just kind of been a huge mystery. And if they don't get something out of that, I think the way that their team is particularly constructed that's made this so tough is you've got Xander Dickson, and Xander Dickson is so good at doing what everybody knows he's going to do, right? But along the same lines, if everybody knows he's going to do that, having him combined with, say, a third player who isn't bringing a lot to the table offensively, I think what we saw this past weekend against the Water Dogs is a situation where, if I remember correctly, Connor Schellenberger had 15 touches. So if your quarterback's getting 15 touches, it's asking a ton more from those other two attackmen. And if one of them is an off-ball specialist, then third guy? You know, if you're getting nothing from that third guy, it's a huge nothing in that situation.
Yeah.
So I think that's kind of the dilemma they've been faced with. If they could get somebody to get, you know, a couple points here and there out of that spot reliably, I think they'd be in a great spot. But, you know, we saw it hasn't quite panned out yet. Easier said than done. Kyle Jackson, what's he doing? Will he come back maybe? I'm not speculating based on rumors. I was just wondering if they've called Kyle Jackson.
What's he doing? What's he doing?
Yeah, give him a call, right? Just somebody at that spot. You know, they've brought in a couple names. Maybe something will pop off, but they are running out of time.
If Boston drops the Friday night game against the Utah Archers, who, if they're rolling as much as you are saying they're rolling, could be likely to happen. That's huge for the Atlas. Like, that'll give them a jolt of energy. They're like, hey, we got a chance to make these playoffs. Like, those darn cannons can keep collapsing. Because Connor Schellenberger is still the reigning MVP. Liam Mentzman is still an all-world goalie. And They have a porous defense who really needs Trevor Baptiste to tilt the field against T.D. Erlen, which would be a tall ask because T.D. Erlen has been absolutely spectacular against them. You almost want, I don't know, T.D. Erlen to win more so they can have a little more 32-second shot clock possessions so that defense has 20 less seconds to defend most of the time, and then you can get it to Connor Schellenberger if he didn't explode. And we'll see where it can happen. But for me, I'm writing them off. Let's see if they can prove us wrong. But you look at the players who are, like, if they shore up this number one pick for next year, right? 5-5 makes this maybe not even worth discussing at this point, and it's too far out to even probably bring it up with this much of the regular season left for the New York Atlas, still with 3 games left to play. But listen, if you have Jeff Teat back and you sure enough, obviously you may want to get a defender. Oh, how about Porton winning defenseman Sean Light? Like, that's a pretty good addition to your defense. How about Ben Johnson coming into the midfield, where Matt Trainer I thought would have maybe a bigger impact this season? That's a Ben Johnston, Matt Trainer, a Brian Costabile midfield that is a whole lot scarier. How about Willem Firth? Maybe bring him in the second round or even as your number one pick, depending on who stays another year, if those ACC players love college so much. Willem Firth, coming from the Ivies, like, I don't know, like, I want to go play with my mentor, Jeff Teat. Team up a left-wing, absolute sensational side over there. Like, listen, New York fans, this is what happens. Like, the Water Dogs struggled a few years just so they can get CJ Kirst and Michael Sowers all those years ago. Like, the ebbs and flows will help you in the long run, but obviously those fans don't want to hear that right now. Yeah, it'll be a special weekend in Columbus, Ohio. Rosie, give us a closing thought to end this edition of the PLO Happy Hour podcast.
I'll say this. I said it a while ago. Super excited about a lot of stuff in lacrosse. And I didn't even name half the things. August means we got the WLL Championship coming to Philly. Whole bunch of other stuff. Even this weekend's matchups in lovely Columbus are sure to be some bangers. I cannot wait for any of it. I'm super excited, and if you listening to this are super excited about something in lacrosse and somebody has a problem with that, you tell them to kiss your feet, because it's okay to be stupid excited about lacrosse stuff.
Well said. Stupid excited to keep on podcasting with you, Rosie. And you can catch all of our podcasts wherever you get your podcasts. And we'll catch you here next time, next week.